What effect does trauma that you don't remember have?
Yeah.
Let's talk about that a little bit. This is going to take us into the area that I think you've been exploring in some of the classes, namely speaking about emotion. So, one of the problems that we have in this culture is that as a people, we're kind of afraid of emotion. And we tend to label or think of emotion as a problem, you know, or a pathology, and to be avoided or overcome or something like that. But really, in the scheme of things, emotion is not that. Certainly, emotion related to trauma, the presence of emotion is when it's related to will, it produces healing. So, when there's trauma, you know, there's three strong emotions that inevitably always arise. And interestingly enough, they're the three emotions that get the worst PR. You know, that are thought of as being bad. Okay, so the first one is in a potentially traumatic situation, fear naturally arises. Because you're looking at the potential that you're going to lose something. And fear arises as in the potential of loss. And its purpose is to help you, if possible, either run away from the loss or overpower whatever the situation or person is. Okay? And then the next step is, okay, now it's not a potential anymore, now the trauma is happening, and you are losing something. So in the presence of that kind of violation, another emotion arises, which is called anger. And anger gives us the capacity to maintain and restore legitimate boundaries, which are now being violated. And then the third step is, okay, the trauma has passed, now you've lost something, and therefore grief arises. And grief arises in the presence of loss, and it's a natural thing, but starting with grief, for example, you know, a person experiences trauma, let's say, well, let's take the example of the death of a loved one, which can be traumatic, right? And in the face of that loss, grief naturally arises. Now, I say naturally because it is natural and it has a legitimate and very important purpose. And the purpose is to clean us out of the pain of the loss. You know, it's like our tears and our sorrow actually washes us clean. It takes time. It's a very important healing process. And it does have an end as long as we open ourselves to it. So opening yourself to feeling the grief and allowing for its expression in time, even though in the short run it really stops the show. It's meant to stop the show. But in the long run, its presence is not a sign of there's something wrong with you. It's the presence of a healer who's coming to wash you clean so that at the end of the process, now you are open and ready to receive what life is going to bring you next. But as a society, one of the problems we have with grief is that we're afraid of feeling it. Nobody wants to feel sad because we think that that's bad, or you know, there's something wrong with me, or if I let myself feel it and express it, I'm going to be, you know, in a pit of sorrow forever, and it's endless. And in fact, one of my psychological friends told me that I think it was 2 or 3 years ago. You know, they have a book, I've forgotten what it's called, but it's a list of all the different syndromes and symptoms of psychological illnesses, right? And grief is now listed as one of them. You know, trying to get over as much as possible and stuff like that, which is tragic because unless we open ourselves to feeling the loss, really opening ourselves to the finality of the loss of whatever it is, it could be an opportunity, a loved one, whatever. If we don't open ourselves to it, it doesn't just go away. It will go away if we open ourselves to it and express it eventually when it's done its work. But if not, it gets dammed up inside. And it can turn into a kind of a crippling kind of lifelong depression. You see that? I mean that literally. It can get dammed up, and a person now is living their life out of their grief and depression for the rest of their lives. That's unnecessary.
Mm-hmm.
Because the nature of it, as I say, is a healer, and it's meant to do its work and move on, just like any other energy or emotion. So, now moving backwards, similar thing with anger. Okay? If you're in the presence of a violation of a legitimate boundary of yours, you better be angry about it. Because in most cases, it gives you what you need to restore the appropriate boundary. An example I like to use is, you know, you're standing in line at the checkout at the supermarket or at the bank or something, and the person behind you is a young woman. She's wearing these, you know, I don't know what, 5-inch spike heels or something like that. And she sort of backs up unwittingly. She steps on your toe and starts grinding this heel into your toe. Now this is a boundary violation, right? So the natural thing, if you're in good relationship to the anger, is the anger rises up just at the right level of intensity to match the violation, and you can say something simple like, excuse me, but did you know you're stepping on my toe? You know, you're not likely to say, is my toe damaging your high heel? I'm so sorry for you. No. It's like, okay, even if it's said kindly, it's still an expression of boundary-setting energy. And usually, the person will say, oh, I'm terribly sorry, I didn't realize to get off your toe. The anger is gone. Everybody moves on. Again, anger is another emotion that people in this society are afraid to feel and express. And we have training in that starting very, very early in life. Let me ask you this. If you contemplate your very early childhood, raise your hand if there was something going on in your family where if you expressed strong anger, your parents withdrew their love from you, at least temporarily. Anybody? Yeah. Right. Practically universal. Now this is terrifying for a young child because young children depend for their very survival, let alone flourishing, on the love of their parents. So very early we start developing strategies to not express anger. And if possible, not even to realize that we are feeling angry. So again, same thing as I said with the grief. Avoiding the expression of it, trying not to feel it, telling yourself that if I'm ever angry, I'm not a good person, or I'm not a spiritual person, or people won't like me, or some version of that. Well, it doesn't make the anger go away. What it does is it dams it up. And it gets bigger and bigger and bigger behind the dam. And eventually it starts turning against you, making you sick. And what can also happen is eventually it bursts out of the dam and it comes out in a much stronger expression than the immediate situation warrants. That's not good either, because it usually causes a reaction from the other side where you get, that can escalate and escalate. And actually, on a big scale, it can turn into literal warfare. But it's not necessary. It's okay to be angry, and it's okay to express anger in a responsible way. Anger in itself is not aggressive. It can turn into aggression. It can turn into hatred if it's bottled up. But again, it's there for a legitimate purpose. It's part of life. life, every living thing has certain legitimate boundaries that need to be defended. And this gives us the wherewithal to do that, or to restore boundaries that have been violated. Now again, with a healthy relationship to it, even in the case of trauma, it's like, okay, the person can rightfully be very angry about the trauma that was inflicted on them. It's natural. But allowing themselves to feel that and express it in a responsible way, which doesn't mean, you know, when it gets over-amplified behind the dam, it's like it doesn't, it's not about defending your boundary anymore, it's about violating somebody else's boundary. And then you get this escalating thing. But it's not supposed to be like that. And likewise with the fear, which is where it all starts, right? Again, fear is a natural and beneficial emotion when we're in balance with it, because it provides us with the, you could say, the energy and the disposition to either get away from or overpower the dangerous person or situation. And that's what's called the fight or flight response. So there are some situations in life where you're in the presence of potential loss, and fear is natural in those situations. But the problem there, like with the other two, is that people are afraid of feeling afraid. People are afraid of feeling anger. People are afraid of feeling grief. Those are the big ones. So back to trauma now. In the presence of trauma, those three emotions are inevitably strong emotions. And they need to be acknowledged. They need to be opened to. And they need to be expressed in a healthy way. And when that happens, as I said, in the case of grief, you discover that they're actually healers rather than illnesses themselves. So in an atmosphere where people have a good relationship to those emotions and have a way of expressing them appropriately, people can and do really heal from trauma. Amazingly enough. But that happens. In cases where we're afraid of experiencing them, let alone expressing them, you know, people can be living out of their trauma for the rest of their life. Which is really a shame. Because it's not a great life for the person in that situation, and also the people around them also are affected by it. Any trauma, by definition, is going to have a strong effect. But how long that effect is, and whether it turns out to be something beneficial or neutral, or something that's the person is living out of for the rest of their life, really depends on relationship we have with those three emotions. Trying to get over them, trying not to feel them, trying to deny that you feel them, all that stuff, it just doesn't work.